mercy.
Oh my God, what is happening?
What is going on?
I have no fucking idea.
Do you see anyone?
I don't see anyone. You see anyone?
No. We need to do something. Somebody should make a run for the cars.
No!
Try to go
no,
get help.
No, we can't go out there.
Come on, it's the only way. It's the only way we're out of this.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus podcast review of You're Next.
I think someone's in the house.
You sure?
Paul, we gotta get out of here.
Hosted by Jacob.
I'm just trying to think of reasons why I shouldn't kill you.
Arnie.
I want to fuck Alan's bed next to your dead mom.
And Stuart.
You need to calm down.
Don't fucking tell me to calm down.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
We hope you enjoy the show.
That'll be enough to get started. Let's go.
Today, You're Next, starring Charmy Vinson, Nicholas Tucci, Wendy Glenn, AJ Bowen, Joe Swanberg, Barbara Crampton, Rob Morin, directed by Adam Wingard. Anybody know this guy? It's Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who never wants to do anything interesting anymore, Jacob.
And we've really reached our second home invasion classic. I mean, I don't think anyone was calling The Strangers 2 Pray at Night, like, as good as the original. We're really focusing on three movies in this retrospective. And this was, well, maybe the lowest box office, but seemed to have grown the most in esteem since it came out in August 23rd, 2013.
I don't know how anybody can complain about a $1 million film that made $29 million.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that this is considered somewhat of a new classic, because I know I considered it to put it in our underrated films book. This is one that I personally like, but I didn't know there was a following for it.
And I had kind of a problem with it when it came out. Funny enough, this is the only one in the retrospective that I've seen where I was like, I'm going to go with other opinion and not my own on this. I was disappointed. I wouldn't say I disliked it, but I was disappointed, and I can tell you why. It all comes down to expectation. The posters, the hype, everything told me this movie was scary as shit. And so if you approach this movie, again, look at that poster, doesn't tell you campy, doesn't tell you funny, doesn't tell you scary movie, but like ultimately this would be like trying to go to Scream and seeing Scary Movie instead.
Well, I don't know if I'd go to Scary Movie, but I do agree with you. The reason I wanted to see this film, I don't even remember a trailer. All I remember are those posters, those animal masks with the bloody You're Next on there. I'm like, well, that looks fantastic. That looks like a movie I really want to see. And yeah, I was sold because of a poster.
Same here. I went to see this in theaters because of the bloody You're Next and because of the strangers and funny games and all of that. I went in thinking this would be a straight-up home invasion suspense thriller like the first Strangers we reviewed. But that is not at all what the filmmakers wanted to do. Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett did two commentaries for this film, and they said that they felt like home invasion films were in a rut. They said it was everyone was trying to do funny games, performance art or sociopathic killers. That they said the strangers inside them. They just were tired of that and wanted to do something different, something a little bit more fun. Not Scream level ironic, not crazy funny, not Scary Movie, but they wanted something that had a little bit more fun to it, a little bit more Home Alone. Some of the things you're going to see here, they literally took from Home Alone.
Oh, there's some Home Alone moments here. Yes.
I wish I had known that. All I can say is that when you are expecting to be terrified and you get tongue-in-cheek, it can kind of land wrong, even if it's done well. So I didn't know whether it was a good movie or not, but I know it wasn't what I wanted. And I have not seen this movie since that original viewing, but I do think that whether I like it or not, the reason why it's a classic, the reason why we would consider it an innovation is, it is the movie to say the final girl is actually tougher than the invaders. And I think that just that novelty alone is going to make it worth seeking out if you like home invasion movies. Now, as far as the director, Arnie, are you a fan of Adam Wingard? Did that mean anything to you, Jacob?
I mean, we've reviewed him a few times. He did the Blair Witch remake slash reboot. He did Godzilla versus Kong.
Mediocre movies, yeah.
I'm neither for or against him.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was before I saw this. This was the first one I saw of his, was You're Next. But then I remember you, again, when we were talking about movies for the book, and you're like, well, he has this other one, The Guest. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know he had done other stuff. Let me go check that one out. And I, like, if we've done Godzilla versus Kong and Blair Witch Project, we should fit in The Guest somewhere. Like, that's one that deserves to be talked about. But the Blair Witch, his Death Note, but Godzilla versus Kong, like, it hit the right note for me. Like, it's someone I'm still interested in seeing. But no, when I saw You're Next, again, based 100% off of that poster. This even has a star from Step Up 3 in it, and that wasn't the attraction. I didn't know I was going to get some Step Up actors in this.
Well, I would say this about Adam Wingard is that he is part of what everyone was hoping anyway would be a new wave of horror directors. That he got his start, like a lot of the cast members here, with VHS. Did you guys ever see that anthology horror movie where the gimmick is some people break into a house and find all of these old VHS tapes and they just play them all, and it's these little horror directors seeing what they can do on retro format?
I haven't seen those, but I do know he had his start in short horror film.
I saw the first one Halloween, sometime in the past decade. I mean, it came out in 2012. It rolled off me. I never felt like I needed to go back to see the sequel.
They're always a mixed bag, those anthology movies, but there was a really great one. It wasn't Adam Wingard's, in my opinion. But one thing I noticed about this movie, and I think it was part of the hype for this movie, is not only is Adam Wingard involved, but a whole lot of those kinds of people are here. I don't know if you would recognize them by face, but director Larry Fessenden is in this movie. Ty West, he was a big deal for a hot minute. He did The Innkeeper and House of the Devil. Like, there are people associated with this movie. It almost looks like one of those anthology horror movies or some kind of rock supergroup. They got all of these cool directors and said, let's come together and make a home invasion movie. And you can be in it, and you can be in it, and you can be in it.
No, that all goes over my head. The only horror icon I saw in this was Barbara Crampton.
Yeah, same here. I didn't know these other people. Listening to the commentary again, it seemed like Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett were just happy as two pigs in shit to be getting $1 million to make what they called a real movie versus all the run and gun, low budget indie stuff they'd done before. And they said that they were reaching out to people they wanted. Barbara Crampton retired. She hadn't worked in a long time. She was living in Northern California. They just approached her agent and were like, we want Barbara Crampton for this role. These other people, they were like really nervous. They said that having Larry Fessenden on set, they were like, is he going to come over to us and tell us that we're directing wrong? How's it going to be? They didn't know what his attitude was going to be. They hadn't met him before.
Yeah, I can imagine it being intimidating to have, you know, people that have their own opinions about how an indie film should be shot on set.
And what ended up happening is Fessenden stayed pretty hands off, and I think Ty West was telling them, listen, don't worry about what you get. Digitally, they can fix so much of this in post. You can just relax.
Joe Swanberg is the other one. He's the asshole brother, the older brother Drake. His stuff is not all horror, but he did mess with the genre, and he has made several rom-com kind of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know any of these people. I was wondering if Nicholas Tucci was related to Stanley Tucci, but that was it.
So there's a lot of hype, a lot of expectation. I do remember I was at the time reading sites like Ain't It Cool and what have you. They really talked this one up, and I didn't experience it as that. Let's see if I was wrong. I hope that I am. Coming back to this, Arnie, give him the plot, and we can see if there's something funny about You're Next.
It's time for the Davidson family reunion at their cabin in the Missouri wilderness. Wealthy Aubrey and Paul Davidson, played by Barbara Crampton and Rob Morin, are hosting their four adult children and their children's significant others. While the siblings snipe at each other during dinner, a crossbow arrow shatters a window and kills one of the guests. Some men in animal masks break into the house and start to pick off the family members one by one. When they slit Mother Aubrey's neck, they write "You're Next" on the wall in her blood. Of the 10 family members and guests at the party, only four matter. Nerdy college professor Crispin, played by A.J. Bowen, came to the party with his Aussie girlfriend Erin, a former student of his played by Sharni Vinson. Early on, Crispin ran from the house to try to get help. Aaron was left there working primarily with Crispin's brother Felix, played by Nicholas Tucci, and Felix's girlfriend Z, played by Wendy Glenn. Aaron reveals she grew up on a survivalist compound in the outback. She's able to set booby traps and use household items as weapons. She kills one of the intruders and survives many other encounters. Then she discovers the truth. The intruders aren't random psychopaths. They're killers hired by Felix and Z. They're to kill Felix's parents and siblings so Felix could get a big inheritance. Discovering this, Aaron kills all the intruders, as well as Z, and Felix gets a memorable death with a blender on his skull. Crispin then returns looking for Felix and accidentally reveals to Aaron that he was in on the plan. Crispin and Felix were going to split the inheritance. Crispin tries to woo Aaron with the information she was never going to be killed. She'd been brought along as an impartial witness for the cops. Aaron straight up murders Crispin, but didn't notice the police officer standing in the window. The cop shoots Aaron in the shoulder and calls for backup, but the cop triggers one of Aaron's booby traps and gets an axe to the head as credits roll.
Now, we haven't really talked about what makes a home invasion movie a home invasion movie, but I feel like one of the basic rules would be it's got to have more than one attacker. Otherwise, it's just Halloween, right? If you have a guy in a mask and he's breaking in, that's a slasher film. If you have three guys in a mask breaking in, that's a home invasion movie. It's not clear to me in this beginning that there's multiple attackers. And in fact, the masks are such, I have a real hard time, I don't know if you guys do or not, telling one from the other.
Yeah, I noticed in your notes, I think you called one a wolf. I think that's actually a tiger. The fox and the tiger are the ones that look very similar. One's showing teeth, one's not.
Yeah.
And then there's a lamb. Like, that one I could always tell apart, and that's the one at this opening is this lamb. It seems like he's always going to this neighbor's house.
Yeah, they said in the commentary they wanted masks, much like Halloween or Scream, that you could just buy at any store, and they ended up with these. I think what the mistake was not painting them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, actually what they did was they painted them all, but they painted them white. And so they're all the same. I think colors would have really helped differentiate so we know, hey, the fox has the orange mask, the sheep has the white mask, the tiger has a black mask or something like that. It's impossible for me. I watched this movie twice, and once with the commentary, I still couldn't keep track of which killer is where. It's good that it really doesn't fucking matter.
No.
They're just all killers with no personalities or backstory.
Right. All of the killers really are henchmen. We're going to find out that they're working under directives of other people. We'll get into that. But for this opening kill, yeah, why are they attacking Eric Carson and Talia?
It's an alibi, or it's to throw off the cops whenever there is an investigation. It's not just going to be attack on these rich people's home, but there was killers going around and hitting all the homes.
Yeah, they have a very strategic target, and in order to look like they're just bloodthirsty killers that will kill anybody, like the strangers, they're going to target the neighbors.
I do have a question because, you know, we're talking about home invasion, and I feel like that is different than horror. You called out, usually you need more than one killer. A lot of this feels like horror. The way this opening kill is, the fact that they're going to be writing "You're Next" in blood. Are these films, is The Strangers, is "You're Next"? Are these horror films? Are they thrillers? Are they a little bit of both? I'm never very clear on how horror hounds would parse this stuff.
I'm curious to know how everyone defines it for themselves, but for me, the difference between a thriller and a horror movie concerns the level of detail on blood spatter. Are we going to really focus on gore? And if there is a supernatural reading to why the killer keeps getting up.
Yeah, the supernatural thing always seems like a big thing for horror, and this has a lot of gratuitous blood. It doesn't have that supernatural element.
And yet, I always claimed Silence of the Lambs was a thriller, and Stuart, you claim that's horror, even though there's no supernatural elements there. I remember having that debate, because I said it was not horror.
It may only be a thriller, but it's horrific enough for my mind.
So here, I would call this horror. There's a lot of splatter, there's a lot of gore, but I think a home invasion film can be anything. It can be comedy. Home Alone, no matter how you slice it, is a home invasion film.
You're right.
Yeah, and I feel like this does ride that line. It's satire, it's horror, it's a thriller. It kind of borrows from all those different genres.
from the very first shot, really, like, you get the idea that we're peeking through a door, and at first we're supposed to think the man is on top of a woman killing her. It yeah. turns out that it's just sex.
Very dissatisfying sex.
She's, yeah, not really into it.
He's killing her spirit, not her body. He's much older, he's much less attractive, and she does not seem happy to be there.
Right. We will learn later she is a college student, meaning he is a professor, or at least a guest professor. He lives in an awfully nice house in order to be working. It must be a really prestigious university.
Well, what they said is he's forced to live there because the wife found out about the student.
Okay.
So this is his second house.
Yeah.
Maybe the wife had the money, though.
Could be. Not a lot of details here, not a lot of cast members, but that's Larry Fessenden, by the way. He makes these kind of indie movies. They're elevated horror because they almost don't feel like horror movies. Habit is maybe his most famous one. Wendigo is another one. I don't know if they're really good, but I've seen them. They're grimy. They're interesting, I suppose, in a tactile way.
I don't know Caitlin Scheel, who's in this as the woman who never buttons up her shirt, but she's acted a lot.
No, she's the first victim here, and when she gets it, she's playing some kind of, I assume it was composed for the movie, I don't know this pop song.
No, Twilly Band.
Yeah, they talk for half an hour on the commentary about how expensive this song was and how hard it was to get the rights.
It is telling because I do have the score for this movie. Mondo put out a great, you know, they always put out great collector's editions. And this is the one pop song on it. All the rest is just score. This is the one pop song I guess they could afford for that $1 million budget.
Is it of the era or was it like from the 70s? Or I don't know the song.
It's from the era, but they're not a huge band.
No, it's kind of got an OK Go kind of pop, like rock, like sound. Like it's pretty fun here. It's the right song for this kind of home invasion movie. And then we get Eric finding her body. I just want to say, you would think, certainly if it were Hicks or, you know, the usual culprits breaking into your house, your next grammatically spelled correctly.
Yes! I was so happy it wasn't Y-O-U-R next. You say Hicks. I think the average Facebook user would write your next Y-O-U-R.
Yeah.
And so to not only have it be a contraction, but they bothered to put the apostrophe
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
I love them.
Well, and it tells you something about the killers, too. They're educated on a certain level. And when we find out later that this is a college professor and his student, I'm even thinking maybe it is the wife killing them. Like, that's the motive or something like that.
Just because they got the right year there?
Well, maybe.
Is that how sad things are today? You must be college educated. You know to put an apostrophe on Y-O-U-R-E.
Yeah, it might just be like my own snobbery about those things. And believe me, I can put in lots of typos in my emails. I'm not perfect by any means. But again, it's the kind of mistake that, I don't know, people are proud to make in their text. And so
it could have been U R, like the letters U and R next.
Who are these people that are grammatically correct as they go around killing college professors? It'll take a little while to find out. Next, we jump to the real targets, Paul Davison and his wife, Angie.
I did not recognize Barbara Crampton when I saw this in theaters. I didn't know she was in this coming in. I hadn't seen her work in a very long time. And she's just aged since the movies I know her from, Reanimator, From Beyond. I hadn't seen Chopping Mall at this point or some of her other films. So it was lost on me. This time I'm like, hey, she's in this. This was a happy thing.
Yeah, but and I love her too because these are not stupid people. When they get to their mansion and the door is unlocked and she thinks she hears somebody upstairs, she's real quick to be running out the door. She is not going to be the stupid victim exploring upstairs and getting it. I definitely think we're living in a post-Scream world.
For someone who came to horror late in life, like not something I was into as a 10-year-old or teenager. So I appreciate this kind of stuff where like, yeah, you hear a noise and that's scary. You get out of there. You don't investigate it. I guess the husband's going to end up going up there. But I do like that this movie is self-aware of all those tropes and cliches and horror films. And they're going to address them.
Yeah. And it's not feeling as goofy as it's going to be. By being kind of postmodern and kind of tongue-in-cheek, I would stop short of calling this in any way a parody at this point. It still feels like just goofy enough. Like that opening kill and these moments, they have a little bit of playfulness to it, maybe a little Sam Raimi. But you think that they're here to really scare you. I'm still under that belief watching it the original time. And there's a fake out here, too. We will learn as we cut over to this man's son. I guess it's both Angie and Paul's child, their middle son, Crispin, that this dad worked for a defense contractor. And I'm thinking, aha, a new motive as to why he's being targeted, that there's going to be some kind of metaphor here about he forged weapons and now some Greenpeace-loving people that love animals are going to get their revenge. They're playing with motive. I don't know whether how intentional it is or not, but I'm spending a lot of guessing game energy on why these people are invading.
But you are spending a lot of energy on it when the opening kill gives you no reason to believe that this is a targeted family in any way. You think that the killers are in the area. There's nothing, I mean, defense contractor or not, why would they kill the college professor and his lover if they wanted to kill defense contractors?
I get what Stuart's getting at. You drop that line. Again, in movies, that means something. Every time you spend energy dropping a piece of information, it should mean something. So that he's saying he's a defense contractor. We'll find out Aaron, the girlfriend, like she doesn't like that. So it seems like that's going to be a plot point.
Yeah, I agree. They're crumbs. They're the kinds of things you're supposed to ignore and then become the aha moment at the end when you realize it was the thing all along. So we're supposed to think that these are random killers escaped from asylum or whatever, going house to house. I never had that thought. How funny. But it never would occur to me that they were randomly targeting houses.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to think they're the strangers.
All right. It did not occur to me. Again, there was these little ideas about, like, well, there's an ex-wife that would be mad that this man was sleeping with his student. And then, you know, we're going to meet
Crispin is doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm wondering what connections there are.
And I think ultimately some of that is just the writers having fun with, again, those tropes of college professors sleeping with their students and all the class stuff going on in this film. I don't think it all goes together in some cohesive way with these killers. Like, we know what their motive is by the end of this.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you would not suspect that Erin, you might suspect she is the final girl, but you would not suspect that she is capable of the things she's going to pull in this movie. And again, I'm going to point out that the thing that makes this movie so beloved is the fact that she is a better killer than the people invading are. Like, she should be the one outside in the mask taking these people out. She's that good. She is a survival, what, she like grew up on a doomsday?
Her dad was like a doomsday prepper in the outback of Australia and trained her. We're not going to know that until later, but
she's Crocodile Dundee's daughter, right? I mean, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, and I did not suspect her of being a lead in this film because I knew Sharni Vincent from Step Up 3. Now, she is the main female lead in that film, which, Step Up 3, great film. The leads don't matter. It's all about the background characters. Like, they're the most interesting ones. So I'm like, oh, they got this woman from Step Up 3 who is not very interesting. Much better here. Like, she's fun in this one.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that that gets you the credit of being the star. You're right. Maybe you wouldn't think of her as being the final girl because there's so many people in this family, in this cast. It's a family reuniting to celebrate the parents' anniversary. And so it's only because we're meeting her first and because she has an Australian accent that she kind of stands out.
Yeah, that is what sets her apart, is that Australian accent. And we'll see as we meet the other characters, like Drake and his wife, like, just hate her for being Australian. Like, just hate that grinding accent on their ears.
And it just completely randomness, because they didn't want the Australian. They had her trying to do an American accent.
She does an American in Step Up 3.
And they were like, yeah, that American is so bad. Let's just go with the Aussie.
But they're making fun of her. The next morning, we meet the asshole older brother, Drake, and he's talking about kangaroo boxing. I figured in some way he was trying to make a subtle jab at the Aussie girlfriend.
What you have here is a completely ad-libbed opening. Or not completely, maybe, but these actors were given their roles. And once the killings start, it is 100% scripted. They stick to the script word for word.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole beginning is ad-libbed, and it has a loose feel. People are talking over each other. You almost never see that in movies. And it's not like there's background conversations and you're hearing the people who they want you to hear more clearly. No, there's just a lot of chaos, conversation, overtalk.
Like, Drake is really passive-aggressive, right? He's not stupid. Like, you talk about this improv stuff, and that makes sense, because he's going to go off on this whole thing about documentary commercials, and I'm like, maybe he's supposed to be coming off stupid, but I feel like he's just antagonizing everyone around him by, yeah, kangaroo boxing and docu-commercials and very silly things.
A commercial can be a documentary.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very contemptible person. We pretty much like Crispin and Aaron at the start of this, and we pretty much hate Drake and his wife because, again, they're just so aggressively dismissive of everything. And certainly when we cut to them privately, they're making fun of everyone. So they seem like dead meat characters for sure.
And I felt like, okay, this is going to be part of the dynamic of this family. Again, they're rich, so they're going to be dysfunctional. Like, that's what you do. Like, none of them get along. But I am surprised, like, when Amy, the daughter, shows up, she seems very friendly. I'm like, oh, maybe they're not all going to be rich assholes. Maybe some of these kids will have something redeeming about them. I guess you want to feel bad when some of the kills happen later on in the film.
Yeah, she's bringing the Cleveland documentary filmmaker Tariq with her as well. This is Ty West. Again, someone that would be well-known at this point for making little indie horror movies. I don't know if I recognized him by face, but I knew him by name. And yeah, the fact that she would date a filmmaker, again, feels like a threat to these people that probably, I'm guessing, Drake doesn't work at all. He probably just lives off his inheritance.
And I get that same vibe from youngest brother Felix and his girlfriend Z. They, you know, Z's just got that look that really makes her feel like an outsider and doesn't want to have anything to do with this rich family. And, you know, Felix is very quiet. I put him on the suspect list.
I didn't remember much about this movie from when I've seen it in theaters when I was watching it here. I didn't even remember that it had a lighthearted feel. I just remembered a positive impression in my memory of it. And so having watched all the movies we've seen so far, specifically The Strangers and the fact that the neighbors were killed, I'm not suspecting any of these people. I'm just realizing we have enough people here for a very high body count in a movie, but I'm not thinking any of these people are involved.
It definitely feels like they're building the body count here because, yeah, everyone's got a spouse or a significant other.
Mm-hmm. And again, so much are contemptible or, you know, thin. They don't seem to be character driven in any of the conflicts. It's just what comes through most loudly is that we have Crispin struggling with money and having this irritation with his older brother, who he hasn't seen in a while. All the other characters are, yeah, you feel like they're going to be the background kills, and it will all boil down to Crispin versus Drake.
Yeah, I do pick up on, yeah, it can, I don't want to say a love triangle, but there's some contention between Crispin, Drake, and their dad. Like, the dad seems to favor Drake, and he's kind of chiding Crispin, you know, why aren't you going out and trying to get published again and trying to get these grants and all that? So, yeah, I definitely feel there's some tension there, and that might be the drama.
But the film moves pretty fast. We're introduced to a lot of these characters, and as I said in the plot summary, there's four children, one daughter, three sons, and then each of them brings a lover. And so you've got 10 people in this house, and it's hard to keep all of the dynamics straight. It's hard to catch personalities. And even to some degree, it's hard for me to remember which one is the biological child versus which one is the guest. Because the parents don't really act differently towards anybody. Everybody's kind of sniping at each other at the table. Reminds me of my own family. And so I was glad it wasn't long before a crossbow comes in and kills the douchey full of himself documentary director.
Oh, you didn't like Tariq?
Oh, I never had that impression. I liked Tariq.
Yeah, I mean, because he was part of the Underground Film Festival, I hated Drake for making fun of that. I didn't hate Tariq for that being his credit. Like, okay, so he's poor. That's his problem, is he's poor in a family that's all, like, self-centered and materialistic. I wanted him to live. So, yeah, it's a little sad that he's our first kill. But I agree with you, Arnie. They're all a little thin. And so why don't we just get on with it? This is not going to be one where we're exploring the characters. It's certainly not The Strangers where we're going to take 25 minutes before they get into the house. We're going to just get to the blood.
This is a movie that I was sold on because of the poster, because there was an animal mask on the poster, and because of the title. I love, like, a simple title like that for a horror movie. Like, what was the one in that Tarantino, when they made up those trailers, like, Don't, wasn't that one of them? Like, I'm like, that's a great horror title name. Like, I want that movie based on that title. So, like, It's Your Next, great poster. Like, yeah, I'm glad we're getting to the kills pretty fast. Harik goes down, he gets an arrow through the head, Drake's gonna get hit. And the thing that I noticed watching it this time that I didn't pick up on the first time because I didn't know where the story was going, but, like, right away, Aaron does take charge. Like, if you're paying attention, she's the one, like, you know, this family is just losing their shit. It feels very real in that regard. Like, they are, like, just in tears, like, afraid, and she's taking charge and setting up an evacuation plan to get them out of there.
Not only that, but, like, she's the one saying, bad idea, Amy, when Amy gets the idea that, like, we need to go running out the front door to the car. What is the plan? What is she going for?
She's going to run really fast to the car, and they're not going to know she's coming out because they're going to open those doors at the last second, so they won't have time or anything to go after her. That's the plan.
Yeah, okay.
I like this setup, the humor here, where you have Drake, like, this guy is such an asshole, but, like, the fact that he's like, I'm the fastest runner, but I got an arrow in my back, and, like, they're fighting, well, that's your back, not your legs. Like, I wish there's more of this humor throughout. I feel like a lot of it's there in the first act, and then they get more into the kills, but I love the dysfunction of this family at the beginning.
You know, I'm not one for trigger warnings and things like that. I think I'm just against it in general, and yet I find myself very triggered by this, because it just hits home a little too close.
I've been to some of your family meals. I could see that, yes, some of the bickering and one-upsmanship is definitely, I think, relatable to lots of families. It comes through whenever, you know, you have a holiday gathering or relatives you don't see very often for a good reason come over. That's what this feels like. Nobody's seen each other in a great long time. And everyone, yeah, even with arrows in their back, everyone is trying to say, I'm the best, I'm the fastest. I don't know, Jacob. I'm going to actually make the argument that this movie gets sillier and quote-unquote funnier as it goes along.
It maintains that silliness. I'm talking specifically about this family bickering. Like, I really enjoyed this little moment here, and it's going to go away. But yes, there's plenty of silly stuff.
I agree. It is kind of fun. It's funny to see them all arguing about who is the fastest and who's going to run out the door to do this, but it's weird to see this level of arguing when somebody has just been killed. It doesn't feel at all realistic. I realize at this moment that this movie is not going to be trading in ultra realism.
Yeah, no, this is not The Strangers, this is not ultra-realism, but talking about dysfunctional families, like, I do feel like my family, like, kind of falling apart in this kind of way if this started happening. Like, we're still going to be bickering. But you know something's going to happen, right? Because there's such a long build-up for Amy to run out those doors. Like, something has to happen that they're not planning for.
Oh, yeah, I just thought somebody was going to be shot with a crossbow, right? I mean, no matter how fast you are, you're not faster than a crossbow.
Yeah, Tariq dying, well, he wasn't a member of the family. Amy dying is going to change the dynamic. Suddenly, people are crying, people are upset. You know, this was maybe the most beloved member, the only one that didn't seem to have a bad word about anyone else.
She's the nice one.
Yeah, exactly. They've lost perhaps the only untainted soul in this family. Goes running straight into that wire and falls back. Violence. Let's talk about gore. Do they have enough money to do what they need to, or do you feel like the makeup effects are gory enough?
Looking at the kind of slashers or horrors I like Blood Rage, if you joined us during that summer viewing party last year, like, my favorite slasher, like, so I am down for this kind of gore. Yeah, this lower budget stuff. It's not realistic, but I get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think it's the right level for this mood of a movie. I think it's the right level of gore. Is it realistic? No. Is it going to really go for the major gross out? No. But I felt bad for her because she ran into a garrote wire, falls back. It's not enough to kill you instantly.
Yeah, it's not going to sever your head.
Yeah, a different movie would have gone just for the pure beheading. And here, she's going to choke and bleed, and I'm, you know, enjoying that.
All right, yeah, no, realism isn't what I'm talking about. I'll just go ahead and be the grumpy one and say I'm not totally on board with the technical elements of this film. It is awfully low budget. They'd use a lot of shaky cam. If it is a comedy, and I'm trying to take it on those terms, watching it again, I feel like you want the gore to be the punchline. You know, I feel like you really want to see spurts, and you really want to have that, like, wire dripping with blood. And more Sam Raimi is what I would have liked to have seen in these early scenes.
That's funny because I thought of Raimi a lot during this film. And I do think something they do throughout because of budgetary reasons, I'm guessing, is, yeah, in a Friday the 13th, you're going to have Jason slashing that machete and we're going to see it chopping up someone. This one, it's going to show the motion, then cut away, and then they're going to come back for a really cool, like, stage shot of the aftermath, that machete, like, lodged in someone's head or something. And so I feel like that's how they get around their budget constraints here. But I like when we do get those shots.
Yeah, I mean, it's enough. All I'm saying is I can tell that they don't have all the money they might like to.
That
this one feels smaller than the Strangers. They can't relish the individual little details, the fetishize the things that you would just kind of want to do. You know, I feel like it's good enough, but I feel it the constraint. That's all I'm really trying to say.
They're going to figure out that there are cell phone jammers. None of their phones have signals, but Aaron's like, oh, you could text 911. So I'll just keep trying to text them to get that to go through. Can I text 911?
Yes, you can text 911 in many states. It's a state by state thing, but yeah, in some you can. And that is true that texts will try to resend again and again. So I guess it's better than trying like you're calling in for a radio call-in contest and just keep dialing 911.
And we're not clear where this is happening, right? Like, I don't... It's in the country, but I'm not...
It's just the woods. Yeah, a big house in the woods.
Yeah.
One of them is from Missouri, so they actually filmed this kind of near their home in Columbia, Missouri.
Okay.
I don't think it matters where it is, but they really were going to kind of try to keep to things they knew from growing up.
And this is the part of the movie where I think, if you didn't know already, there are multiple people here. We had the idea that maybe somebody was in the closet upstairs. The mom is hysterical. They're putting her to bed. They know that somebody with a crossbow is outside, but there is also somebody underneath her bed popping up. You're telling me that this is a wolf? A tiger?
No, this is a tiger. That's what the credits say, at least. Tiger mask.
Okay, I couldn't tell.
I don't blame you for getting it confused. Like, a wolf makes more sense if you're going to have a lamb and a fox. A tiger, that's like a jungle animal, not a... it's a different category. I agree. But with this whole reveal, like, I do love that shot. Like, she's laying in bed, and you just see this hand reach out from underneath the bed. It's like, oh, shit. Like, it's a great little moment.
Agreed. It's working in the most basic way all home invasion movies must work. They need to get you with the little jump scares and the raising of tension. And I do feel like there are many times in this movie where I do react as they want me to. They play me and I respond in kind by jumping and getting fooled at the right moment.
I found it odd that they killed a couple to start off. They killed the daughter and the daughter's boyfriend. I felt like there could have been a little bit more drama by having people mourning their partners. But nobody seems to care that their sister's dead either.
No, which seems right for this family.
At this point, this is when Drake's wife is going to kind of freak out. Like, she's... Once mom is dead and they have in blood scrawled on the wall, you're next. Again, that seems to be their calling card. She's not going to be next. She's going to go running out the door. And Crossbow, Lamb, is going to follow her to the professor's house.
Yeah, it should be said earlier, Aaron went to that professor's house because Barbara Crampton asked her to go get some milk from him, and that music was just blaring, and no one answered, so she left. So again, they set up that something's going on there. We saw the kill at the beginning, and again, you see this wife now banging on that window. Like, you could see the body there. You don't know what's going on with this professor's body, but, like, the music playing and then the reflections of the lamb and the glass. This might be very rudimentary horror things, but they're very effective.
And in the meantime, Erin is taking control. We've seen that she's even fought one off. Somebody was coming in through the kitchen window, and she impales the hand with a knife.
Which felt like a very... Straw Dogs moment to me. Like, didn't Dustin Hoffman, he like wrapped the one guy's in the wire when he's trying to come through the window? It felt like a little homage to that.
Well, we'll find out later that she's in the kitchen because she's already boiling the oil, you know?
Yes.
She's seen Straw Dogs. She's seen them all, and she knows how to do this stuff. And Crispin is, we'll find out exactly why he's so worried at the end of the movie, but he is really unnerved by the fact that he is not having to protect his girlfriend. She's trying to protect him and handing him little meat cleavers. And does, again, does not seem at all that distressed that they are under siege.
Yeah, he even says, I've never seen you act like this before. But when would you see someone act like this unless you're under siege?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because he thought she was the student of his. She's this little meek woman. She'll just sit here and watch the killings and tell the cops, oh my God, I'm so lucky to be alive. And no, it's this choice of girlfriend that's going to fuck up his entire plan. And I'm liking her in this film. You know, she does take control. I'm not going to say any of these actors are the best actors in the world. Not many of them have gone on for much or done much before, but I like her attitude. I like her intensity. I like her competence. I believe she's convinced she is better than these people.
Yeah, I'm not saying to give her a gold statue, but having seen Step Up 3, again, a movie I super like, she is actually really good in this, where she left no impression with me in that.
It's a fun part. Again, it's the gimmick of the movie. She's good enough in it. But just to throw it out there, is she coming on a little too strong? Would it have been better if she had looked more nerdy like Crispin? I mean, let's just face it. She's out of his league. Like, he's the plump professor type. And she's very fit, and they could have disguised a little bit more that she is going to be as capable as she is.
They could have done a she's all that, and she had some glasses, and her hair was, like, pulled up.
There we go. Yeah, maybe that's all that I needed. Some nerd glasses that got broken by a flying arrow.
A Dustin Hoffman moment from Straw Dogs. Yeah, break those glasses, and she becomes tough.
It's not blowing my mind that she's taking over. It's a surprise. Yes, I didn't expect it, but it's a surprise I quickly adjust to, and faster than anybody else in the house does. And it might have been more fun to have a character that seemed more meek. Or, again, you could have written her so that there was reasons for people to underestimate her.
Yeah, I thought part of the fun, like, once you realize who she is, that she is so capable. So it wasn't a huge problem for me. But again, I don't come from a traditional place with horror, I feel. Like, the fact that she immediately, like, knows what to do, and then, yeah, we'll get to what she does when she first runs into one of the invaders. Like, to me, it's a lot of fun.
But there's also, what, 3 invaders coming in, and she's going to kill one of them very quickly with a meat tenderizer. A very brutal kill that she just keeps hitting him again and again and again.
I believe that's the screenwriter that, like, when she's like, has anyone recognized this guy? That's the joke. That's the guy that wrote the movie.
Yeah, that is right. But it's not like she's so capable she immediately finishes off the other two. She's able to survive, but she's not able to vanquish these guys with ease.
Yeah, but I guess I feel like the joke's out, right? Like, we know how this is going to go from now on. We don't underestimate her again.
No, but for me, that's not a problem. We'll get to Don't Breathe. That's a movie I've seen, though, and that's part of the fun of that movie is, like, what if you break into a house and Michael Myers is there?
This is the opposite of that. What if you break into a house and realize you are totally not prepared for the level of lethality that's awaiting you?
Yeah, it's kind of a mirror image of that, but it works in the same way. It's unexpected, it's a different take on the genre, like, it's not something I was expecting the first time, and so, yeah, to me now, it's like, you gotta deal with Rambo. You thought you were gonna kill this rich family, it was gonna be easy, and now you gotta fight Rambo.
Yeah, I agree, it's a fun gimmick, I like it. It is a short movie, so they don't have to stretch it too far, but is it going to be a one-joke movie? Because now that we know that she can meet tenderize the first guy, what else is there to say? Like, of course she can take the other two.
I'm meanwhile left wondering, what would the strangers have done in this scenario?
Die?
I mean, I guess we saw in the sequel that they were able to be killed and they just got mad and tried to avenge each other. But here, had the strangers been breaking into Liv Tyler's house and Liv Tyler beat the crap and killed one of them with a meat tenderizer, would they have kept coming?
Again, the tone is so different. Would you call this a parody? I mean, this could almost be a parody of The Strangers.
I wouldn't call it a parody.
Yeah, I think this is a horror film that understands the cliches and it's having fun with those.
Just think about the lighthearted horror films that are horror films. Freddy vs. Jason's the one that comes to mind, though I know there's a lot more. Evil Dead 2. I feel like we're in that territory.
Yeah, I definitely think about Sam Raimi a lot, and Sam Raimi is someone who is talented both with comedy and horror. He can make you jump, and he can make you laugh, sometimes with the same moment in the, with the same person. And so, yes, this feels like a less creative, less well-funded, or visually stylish Sam Raimi kind of take on Home Invasion. Now, where they do get me, and I forgot this even having seen it before, was the fact that I remembered it was somebody in the house that was in on it, but I was never thinking about Felix or Z, and I probably should have been, because they're obviously, when you see them, always smoking and sideway eyes, you can even watch in this, they're the ones that were like opening the door for Amy to run out, you know? Felix was setting her up for that tripwire. They're revealed in this moment. They go upstairs. Dad's trying to say, we've been targeted, and not reactive when they see one of the invaders slash their dad's throat.
I mean, they react a little bit. Felix is like, really? You had to do that right in front of me? But yeah, he's annoyed.
Yeah. Right. And so that adds a certain new level of fun. That's the surprise I was looking for, to keep the movie's like one joke premise afloat.
And of all the people, the father probably deserved to die, because he's the reason Mother Barbara Crampton dies. She wants to leave earlier, and she doesn't want to go upstairs. She wants to stay with the others. He puts her to bed, and that's where she's going to get her throat slit and "You're next" written on the wall.
Suddenly it makes sense. I mean, because they were so hateful to one another. Of course, one is hateful enough. The one that's been saying nothing, the one that's been trying to play a low profile, is just like, I'm going to have all of these people whacked and then I'll get the inheritance. And I think the drop line is he knows these people because they were all in the military together.
Well, yeah, at least two of them. We'll find out that Tiger and Lamb are brothers. Lamb's going to be very upset when he finds dead Tiger. And yeah, there's some kind of military connection, which again, if you've seen The Guest, Wingard's follow-up film has a whole thing about the military. And like, I do wonder if there's some kind of connective universe he has thought of.
Mm. Yeah, that movie's like an evil Captain America movie. But
yes,
but we'll have to cover that another time. We're here in this one. And yeah, I do like this twist. And now the question is, again, it's not much of a mystery because I think they've told us Erin is smart enough to figure all of this out and defend herself. When will she figure it out? And how many more people will die before she does?
I know she's smart, but I don't know that she would ever suspect anybody in the family. And so that left the level of suspense for me of she's now with her enemies and doesn't know it.
Yeah.
What kind of problems will that cause her? How will that undermine her ability to defend herself?
Yeah, one thing she drops is like, we can't go into the basement because they could just set a fire down there. And she's telling this to Felix and Z. And then she's going to spend a lot of time in the basement. I thought they were going to try to take that information from her to kill her.
Yeah, she ends up like making nail boards, right? Like she knows they need to line the windows so that if anyone tries to come in, they'll be stepping on some nails and thus revealing their position. It's almost like a security alarm, the person screaming as they step inside.
Yeah, that is a very Home Alone moment. She's going to build this other booby trap with an axe. But yes, this feels very Home Alone. She's building these nail boards. I think Kevin McAllister used, glass Christmas ornaments to get the robbers in that one. This in a similar way.
The nail boards, they said, were specifically from Home Alone. And that, they said, I haven't seen Home Alone in a while. They said there was a nail board in Home Alone. And that when Joe Pesci gets a nail through his foot, they were, you know, wincing.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that now.
But you speak of the basement. Drake is down in the basement. He has been injured, trying to recover. He doesn't even realize that they used his wife to smash through the window. He's asking his brother about her, and Felix just realizes almost instinctively, I hate you, and just stabs him.
The fact that he has to keep stabbing him.
Let's just call it a parody movie. Yeah, the kinds of things that I'm thinking of are where we would have in the video store of our mind, putting this in a comedy and not in a horror section.
Yeah, but this just feels like a Sam Raimi moment to me. Like, just stabbing him repeatedly, like, will you just die? And he finally falls down. He has, like, six different knives in him. Like, this works to me as a horror comedy.
Yeah, I didn't realize each stab was a new knife. I just thought he kept stabbing with the same knife because it's off screen. It's under the frame. And so when you see all the knives in him, it's like, oh, God, he was picking up a new implement each time.
But, you know, like, this still is in the, like, home invasion genre. Another rule that I think you need to work is that the enemy is within the house and exterior. You have to play with the tension that's going on between them. And I do feel like these scenes with Erin and Z, where, like, she's trying to teach Z something, and Z's like, Do I take the nail board when she looks away and whack her head with it? Like, this is stuff that you want. It kind of reminds me of, like, Dustin Hoffman and Susan George. Like, their marriage is part of the problem that they can't work together to keep the yokels out. She ends up going upstairs to look on Dad is basically how she gets out of this scenario. She sees him dead and she knows that, well, these people have been lying.
I thought what was going to tip it off is there's a scene where Felix and Z, they start to get on each other, and it's on the bed with Felix's dead mom, and Z's totally into it, and Felix is like, no, I don't want to do this. But we see Z take that ring from the mother, and so I thought that was going to be like the hint that tipped off Aaron, that she would see that ring on Z and start to suspect them. But that is not what happened.
I don't care how hot you are. Fuck me next to your dead mother is not a good come on line.
Yeah, I think at this point is where you realize Z is more dangerous than Felix. Like, she's probably whispered into his head, like, you need to kill your family, right? This, like, could be all her, like, because she's mad at him that he never wants to do anything fun. I'm like, he's murdering his family. Like, I would say he's taking some risks here, probably at her encouragement.
Yeah, what they said in the commentary, and I got this from the movie, but not as explicitly, is that they didn't want to hit you over the head with all of the what went on. But if you watch carefully, you find out Z is the mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
Z is the one, and you find it out when she wants to fuck next to the mom and everything. Z is right. The really crazy one.
Right.
And it's Z is dangerous, and so Z had these friends. She's the one, she knew who to call if you wanted to get some hits. I mean, her boyfriend there wasn't in the military. The killers know each other from the military, and Z knew the killers. And so it's not ever going to be espoused in dialogue. There's not going to be huge conversations about, Z, you told us this, da-da-da. But it's all in the characterization if you look for it.
Yeah, it's there if you want to find it. I don't think it's necessary to have it all drawn out. Like, I didn't need to know every step of their plan. The fact that Aaron's going to find out that Felix and Z are both behind this, and she's going to take them both out in delightful ways.
Now, were you guys wondering at all about Crispin in this? Because they do that writing trick. Crispin left to get help, but he's gone for so long, it's easy to forget about him entirely, you know? You're playing like a 10 Little Indians thing here, and people are getting knocked off one by one by one. And so many people were hard to keep track of in the family dinner, and now all of them are dead. If you told me to tell you which ones died at the neighbor's house versus which one died at the house, I can only remember a couple really spectacular, memorable kills. And so that Crispin is gone hit me right about this time. It's like, wait a sec, Crispin's still out there. We've never found the body. And I started to suspect him.
Yeah, I had forgotten about this development. I'm having a lot of fun with blenders to the head and that knife disease head. And I know Crispin somewhere. Like, I remember him running out saying he was going to go look for help. But I had forgotten that he was in on this as well.
Yeah, I wasn't suspecting him because typically this would be for Aaron to find, right? Like, you wouldn't show his kill necessarily.
Yes.
He would show Aaron jumping out the window as she does, you know, flailing around in the dark with these people. And then when she thinks she's safe in the bushes, finding her dead boyfriend in there screaming and revealing her position. I figured they were saving that moment for the right shock. But no, it never occurred to me that the sweet, goofy guy that was being picked on, I mean, the motivation is clear in retrospect, but because of the way that he was introduced and the way that she was even told, like, oh, he's probably out there, like, tough and take care of himself. And she's like, oh, no, he can't take care of himself. I know that he's a wimp. I just didn't think that they were going to twist that into, well, wimps would hire killers to take out their family.
But I was thinking about him while Z is getting her death, and this is spectacularly fun. And if I've wondered about the tone of this movie throughout, the blender death just makes it very clear. Yeah, I laughed out loud, and to laugh out loud about a movie that you're watching alone is a very unique experience. Usually laughter is a communal thing.
I have very probably non-standard taste when it comes to slashers and horror deaths, but when I get a good one, like, I'll cheer out loud. And yeah, that blender death got me to cheer out loud, and the knife to the head too. Like, it's so brutal. Like, that's the kind of goofy stuff I want in my slashers.
Yeah, she throws the boiling oil on Felix and he's like,
it's not heated up,
it's not even hot. So, like, yeah, all right, here's a blender. Like, here's the problem. It's not a problem anymore. But when you thought you were watching Straw Dogs and it became this, you're like, what the fuck? And it just becomes more and more this. The fact that we're ending with people getting their brains blended and stabbed in the head is a far cry from what that poster told me would be going on. And it's also worth pointing out she killed the other two intruders pretty easily. Like, we don't even savor those deaths.
No, once she finally gets around to it, it happens very quick.
It's more about getting the people really responsible.
Right. I feel like that's true. These were the people, not specifically, but this family was mean to her. In some ways, it's karmic justice that she gets to live out a revenge in which they, yeah, are killed in very graphic detail.
It definitely feels that way, because I feel like, okay, yeah, you're murdering people, but this is all in self-defense. But when Crispin shows, you know, he's going to call Felix's phone. Guys, have a password or something to, like, verify who you're talking to if you're going to come up with murder plots. Not that I want anyone to have successful murder plots, but...
More than that, at least wait for them to say hello or something, right? Instead of just, like, Felix, is that you? Oh, my God. You know I had to run out of there. You knew I couldn't handle this.
Well, I mean, okay, yes, that's not very wise, but this is not a skillful mastermind of crime. Like, he's pretty bad at this.
Yeah, it is funny. He's like, you know, I'm a pacifist, so, like, that's why he couldn't handle it.
Right, right. And again, I think even when he gets busted, he thinks he has a chance of making it up with her. He's like, well, you know, we were broke, and now we can go to Paris. Now we can, you know, do the things we want to, and I was never going to kill you.
Maybe we can even get engaged?
Yeah, she needs to believe her life was never at stake, that it was always about killing the family, and that she was always going to be left as a witness.
And I think that's true.
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. The real question is, where does Erin's morality lie? She didn't really like this family or know this family. She's been trained to kill, and she's so good at it, I have to believe she's done it before. So would she even admire her boyfriend more now that he's proven to be this... Well, if not bloodthirsty, at least calculating.
No, because her response is to stab him in the neck. And then, which feels very, I just want to really, like, tell you how much I disagree with you, is that she stabs him in the eye after that.
Why the fuck not?
This is cold-blooded murder.
Yes.
And she probably, you know, because she's been cut and things, I mean, they never intended to kill her, but once she started fighting back, the killers were more than happy to defend themselves and try to stop the one that killed his brother and things, and so I could understand being mad and wounded physically, not just emotionally, but yeah, to cut his neck and stab him in the eye... She was going to die at this point. The cop in the window was going to shoot her in the head. She's dead too. Credits roll.
Yeah, we should say that text finally went through, I guess, because the cops have shown up. And all this cop sees is this woman covered in blood stabbing a dude in the neck and the eye. Like, yeah, you think we got to put her down. Like, so he shoots her.
It's the Night of the Living Dead kill, you know, like the irony that you survived the zombies only to be killed by the mob that was cleaning up the zombies. The cop is supposed to be the one riding in and saving you. But yeah, irony, sure. But a little different than the ironies of Home Invasion. I feel like Home Invasion movies, usually the people inside are morally corrupted. Like, it would be more in the tradition of Straw Dogs that she would be like, I can go with this. I can compromise my morals. I can be a person that allows their boyfriend to murder their family for an inheritance and then get shot.
Yeah, they decided that killing her, having her brains blown out there was just way too bleak. It was gone in the first rewrite, and they just went with the shot in the shoulder.
Yeah, I do feel like what happens is, you know, she gets shot in the shoulder. She's going to try to warn this cop to not come inside because there's that axe booby trap, which is going to swing down and, of course, kill him. And, like, now it looks even worse for her. Like, to me, this is an even darker ending because more cops are coming, and now there's a dead cop there, too. There's no way out for her.
Yeah.
Oh, the whole story is hers to tell. She can tell whatever story she needs to. I think she's perfectly fine. These people in the masks were killing us. She can say that they killed Crispin, you know? Whatever she wants to say, she can say.
But she's moral. She won't, you know, like, I think that's what's been exposed here. She's not going to lie. She's going to tell the truth.
I didn't take it as she was doomed to a life of prison.
Oh, that's how I take it.
But it's a short movie, and it ends on that note. So, Jacob Stewart, you're next in saying if you recommend this film. Jacob.
Like, this is the kind of, again, is it a horror? Is it a thriller? It's a little bit of both. I think because of the splatter, you could call this a horror. And it's the kind of horror film that appeals to me. Again, Blood Rage, great slasher. Not the best Texas Chainsaw, but the second best Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Like, love that film. Like, so I get it. I have a different sense, probably a non-conventional approach to horror. But, like, this is what I like because I know what all the tropes are, know what the cliches are. So, yeah, give me something that's going to address that. And this is funny. This is going to have your final girl who really is the toughest one in the film. And so that's a lot of fun seeing her go through. And again, it's not like Rambo where she's totally in control all the time, but she's always able to take care of herself. She might have to jump out a window and extract a big piece of glass from her leg or something, but she always has a plan. And so to me, that's what the fun of this film is. I wish there was a little more of that dark humor with the family infighting, but again, that kind of goes away once all the killings start. But throughout the film, like, I am entertained. I again, a dark comedy is how I describe this, that with a lot of blood, not a lot of gore perhaps like we're talking about, but a lot of great shots that would be frames, like when Kelly, the Drake's wife, gets that axe to the head and they pull back and you just see it lodged in there. I don't even think the guy in the lamb mask can get it out of her head. It's, again, that kind of stuff is funny to me. And so, yeah, this is an entertaining film. It's not a serious, dark home invasion film, and that's okay for me. Like, I have a lot of fun with this one. I haven't seen Don't Breathe 2 yet, but I'm predicting out of all these films, like, this is going to be my favorite one. And so, yeah, I strongly recommend this one. It's not a serious, scary film, but it's going to get you to jump. It's going to get you to laugh, and there's some great tongue-in-cheek moments. So, yeah, solid recommend for You're Next.
Stuart, You're Next.
Yeah, I can't be as enthusiastic, but I will say that I was wrong in my initial assessment of not recommend. It's a very silly home invasion movie, probably the silliest we've covered or ever will cover. But I do think that it's still invested in the genre enough to be suspenseful. Like, it plays me. I jumped more than once. I had fun with the cat and mouse. It is not just shtick. It is not scary movie stupid. It does really want to scare you, and that's important. I don't have to fully take it seriously, but I need to be able to buy into the world in a suspenseful way. And I think we do. The skill of the director is such, even though they don't have all the money that they should, even though the camera work is a little sketchy, and certainly the characterization is not there. I mean, one thing that I do love, you know, when you consider the fact that I like a home invasion movie like Straw Dogs, which is 80 minutes of character building before we're going to get these games started, it would have been nice to have a little bit more dimension to our final girl. If I don't know the killers or the killers don't matter that much, I feel like I really wanted to root for her, and she's maybe only slightly more likable than Nev Campbell or Miss Langenkamp. I mean, she's kind of generic. And so it's no classic. I'm not exactly sure why this film has become a cult item, but it is a fun little exercise. As long as they don't do a sequel, I think it's fine to watch this one. It's a mild recommend.
Yeah, they won't do a sequel because, as they said on the commentary, all you fuckers didn't go see this in the theaters. It's all good. You went to see The Purge instead.
Yeah, I like this better than The Purge.
I agree. I like this better than the first Purge movie, too. Not to be confused with the movie called The First Purge.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes. The Ethan Hawke one.
Yes. I didn't remember a whole lot about this movie, and I came in expecting the strangers, like you did, Stuart, when you saw this in theaters. And as it went on, I realized that I was having a lot of fun. It was like a really bloody Knives Out when you realize one of the family is involved in the killing. And then once you have that dramatic irony going on, it's even better that it ups the suspense. But I do believe this movie has suspense. I do believe that several times I did think that they might get the upper hand on Erin. I knew Erin was going to be our final girl and get out, but what would happen to her along the way when Z is thinking about hitting her in the back of the head with those nails and things? Those are truly suspenseful moments, and I think that Wingard shows a deft hand at directing these scenes. I like the camera work that goes on here. I like some of the angles. You complained about the shaky cam, Stuart, but I like the free-floating steady cam, shaky cam kind of stuff they do for a lot of this. And as I said before, the recommends, it's short. This is 94 minutes with credits. It's a fleet movie, which you want a funny movie to be. It never has time to slow down and get dull. I do wish the killers were a little bit more differentiated, maybe color the masks so I could tell who was who instead of just going that killer in an animal mask, that killer in an animal mask. I couldn't even tell which mask was which half the time.
Yeah, that is the ultimate irony. Like, we were all sold on this poster of an animal mask, and then that is the most frustrating thing in the film because we can't tell them apart.
We're not talking about the invaders. Yeah, they don't matter.
But it's a fun slasher flick that I can easily give a solid recommend to.
But help me out here. I mean, you would have wanted to see a I don't know if maybe they don't have the money or maybe there's just no interest. Maybe, as you say, Arnie, just keep it short and funny. But wouldn't you have wanted to see the backstory of Erin and how she got there? Instead of it just being a line that I grew up this way, wouldn't it have been fun to go to Australia? I kind of had the impression it wasn't that she grew up on like a survivalist camp, but like I thought maybe she was someone that had already survived a different like slasher finale.
No, she says her dad like took her to the outback and raised her that way, and then she came to America with her mom.
No, I know. What I'm saying is I don't really like that. Wouldn't it have been more fun to find out that she had been the star of Friday the 13th 3 or something like that?
Yes, yeah, Stuart, write the prequel. You're first.
I don't know. Like, I just felt like there was more jokes to be had. Even if you want to go the comedy route, there was more fun to have us on her side.
I'm just shocked that it has an Australian woman and they didn't pull a, now this is a knife joke in this one.
Yes.
I really think the only thing Wingard and Barrett know about Australia is Crocodile Dundee. And so I really rolled with it. But yeah, I was surprised there weren't actually more callbacks.
That thing feels improvised. It does feel like creative people that didn't have a whole lot of money, but just kind of wanted to do something on a lark. And it came out pretty good, you know, for that kind of thing. But it didn't feel like, I don't know, when you see the guest, that feels scripted in a way that the calculations are more surprising. There's just more to that movie, in my opinion.
Well, there's more to this donation drive still. We're getting to the meat of it. The new movie, Don't Breathe 2. And so next in this Silver Donation series will be the original Don't Breathe from 2016. It didn't seem that long ago.
Yeah, it's been 5 years.
So thank you for supporting Now Playing. Jacob Stuart, thank you for joining me. And until next time, this conversation is over.
Just so we're perfectly clear, I just had to kill my own brother because you guys keep getting beat up by some girl. I had to stab my brother. More than once! You were supposed to do that! For all the good you guys did in here, you could have stayed outside with your fucking crossbows!
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
Do you do commercials? Because those are my favorite.
No.
Mm-mm, no.
No, he doesn't do commercials.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
Let's throw in an extra 100 each if we can finish this!
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Why would you even say something like that?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
This entire situation is out of control. We don't even know what's going on.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
The cops could be driving here right now for all we know.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Thanks for the help, by the way.
Hey, you seem to have a handle on it.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for Thy food. Feed our souls on the bread of life and help us to do our part with kind words and loving deeds. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
This even has a star from Step Up 3 in it, and that wasn't the attraction. I didn't know I was going to get some Step Up actors in this.
Yeah, we know how much you want to do that retrospective, Jacob, and we keep saying no. I don't know why. Maybe we should give it to you someday. How many Step Up movies are there? Seven?
No, I think five.
I thought six.
Is it six?
They're multiplying by the hour. Who can say?
There's Revolution, which is four, and then All In, which is
there's
five.
There's Step Up to the Streets, Step Up 3D, Step Up Revolution, Step Up All In, and Step Up Year of the Dance.
That's when did that come out?
I missed that year. Was that COVID year? I didn't know there was a dance year.
Yeah, that I'm not aware of that one.
It says 2019.
I missed a Step Up film. I don't remember hearing about that one.
All right, then that's I think it's on next year. We got to do Step Up.
Oh, it's a Chinese Step Up film.
Ah,
like part of the franchise though. I'll research this. We'll get back to your next.
I got to research this on my own. International series. Seriously, they decided to go international and make international installments. It is official.